Hi, this is Greg Sestero, and it's time to leave your stupid comments in your pocket and listen to Skip to the End podcast.
Thanks, Greg. That was our mate. Yep. Friend of the podcast.
Apparently fourth member of the podcast.
Star of the room.
Oh, hi,
Greg
Mark.
Sestero. Oh, Mark. Amazing. Amazing to have him on.
What a great intro as well. Probably the best intro we've ever had.
We've had a few good ones.
But that's good.
To be told to keep our stupid comments in our pocket by the man himself, Sestosterone.
And what are the odds, do you think, of us keeping our stupid comments in our pocket over the next hour and a half?
Probably not great.
Slim to none,
I would say. It's not looking good.
We could potentially maybe do it, but then right at the end, I imagine we'll slip up.
Indeed.
Let's say hello.
Shall we say hello?
Yeah.
Welcome to episode 34 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And I am currently wearing my Tommy Wiseau pants that Mark bought me. Regular listeners will know he bought me a pair of Tommy briefs. A couple of episodes ago, and I've cracked them out today. It's the first time I've worn briefs in about 20 years.
How's it feel?
I'm a boxer's man. It doesn't feel right.
How's it hanging?
It's not hanging at all. I'm very constricted.
they're literally small as well.
They're going right up my jacksie. I don't know that I'm going to wear them again. I think I might just frame them. I will clean the skids out first.
Why don't you give them away?
Who would want them?
Skids involved as well.
Skid to the end.
Good Lord. And on that bombshell, what have we got on this episode then? Mark, what's our topic?
It is the top three characters of all time.
That is
bloody hard.
That is ridiculous, yeah. And what's our rewatch, Adam?
Beetlejuice.
Indeed. And then our main review this week is Bridge of Spies. Another collaboration, first one in a while, between Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks.
Can't wait.
So, let's get started.
Right, boys. I don't know about you guys, but I set the topic on the last episode of the top three movie characters of all time. I found this ridiculously hard and very, very challenging, where I think I've changed my mind probably 10 times over 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find it hard? Or
I thought it was rock hard, but what I did is I went with my gut. I picked three pretty much off the top of my head, the first ones that came into my mind, and I've not thought about it again, because I knew if I went back to it, I'd keep umming and ahhing and changing and swapping. I thought, no, go with your gut.
I had about 10. And then immediately ruled out anyone that was conceived for anything other than film.
Okay.
So anyone that was in, started off in a book or a comic or anything like that, went.
Wow.
That's an interesting way to look at it. So you're looking at people who are purely cinematic creations. Yeah. Yeah, okay. I like that.
I've been waiting to hear this, so let's get on with it. Adam, give me your first.
Ripley.
Nice. Yeah. I'm sold already.
Yeah, badass to fuck. And when she starts out, it's just that change from Alien to Aliens to Alien 3, unfortunately. but it's just a very different character every time we kind of see her.
Mm.
And that's the most interesting thing. Because I think film franchises kind of have a way of doing this, where if they develop the character well, that character is going to be seen as a long-standing, one of the top characters of all time. And Ripley just personifies that for me. She is a character who started off quite unsure, didn't really know what she was dealing with. But I mentioned in, obviously, the fight scenes last time around, that when she takes on that alien queen at the end of Aliens, it's just that shift in how she is from Alien to Aliens. Yeah. It's just phenomenal.
And it reminds me a bit of Sarah Connor's in The Terminator, because she's similar to that. You know, she's sort of a meek woman, kind of out of her element in the first one, but by the second one, she's a stone-cold badass.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of that in Ripley as well.
And that's the whole point. I mean, that's the whole point of Ripley.
Mm.
Such a great character, and I really hope we get to see the new Alien film, which has been put on hold, has it, for a while?
Neil Blomkamp's Alien film is put on hold because Ridley Scott has decided that Prometheus is an Alien film and he's got to do eight more now or something.
So I just would like to see Ripley return.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that was about either. Is that just Ridley Scott going, wait, what? Yeah. No, you can't have Alien.
Not yet.
I think that's basically what he said. I think Prometheus 2 was going to be its own thing, somewhat in the same universe. But as soon as Blomkamp said, I'm doing an actual Alien film and I'm bringing back Ripley, he went, no, I'm going to jump on that bandwagon.
Prometheus 2 online.
Is now Alien Covenant.
Which will change in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it will be, yeah.
A brilliant start, and I'll never, ever argue against that. And I love your point last week about the whole, in one film she's being chased and then she kind of does the chasing. And yeah. I was like, that's superb. Ben.
Yeah.
Your first.
My very first one was actually the first one that came to my mind when I was thinking of this. Natural Born Killers is a phenomenal film. And Robert Downey Jr. as Wayne Gale is the best thing he's ever done. Yeah. I love him in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I love him as Tony Stark, Iron Man. But as Wayne Gale, the Australian reporter in Natural Born Killers, he is so funny.
Phenomenal.
He's hilarious. And then the fact that he starts to suffer from a bit of Stockholm Syndrome and all of a sudden he thinks he's one of them. And then at the end they just kill him, spoiler alert. He's just phenomenal in that film. And I think that was when he was kind of persona non grata in Hollywood. It was in sort of the height of his drugs. And
97, was it?
97? Yeah, thereabouts, yeah. And it was when he was... You know, no one wanted to hire him. People wouldn't insure him to work because of his history
in
with
and
drugs
out of rehab and
booze. Exactly. But Oliver Stone directed it, didn't he? And he took a chance on him. And I think that was one of the seeds for revitalizing his career because he is so funny as Wayne Gale. The bit where he gets shot through the hand and then he's got like duct tape on his hand.
It's a great film, that is.
Wayne Gale, class.
Such a good choice. My first one, I'm going with a character that I wanted to be when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. So for me, I've got to get the obvious one out of the way, Indiana Jones.
Nice.
I know a lot of people either went with the trilogy of Star Wars or Indiana Jones, and I've discussed this on a previous episode, but I wanted to be that archaeologist. I wanted to be him. I remember going into my parents' room and finding a whip, which makes a lot of sense now I'm older. And I remember using it and walking around wanting to be in the end. For some reason, my dad wanted me to never have that whip again, but... Yeah. Very odd.
Did you wash it first?
But the hat as well. And I just wanted to be him. I remember running around pretending the boulder was following me. And
did you
growing
think
up...
your dad was Indiana Jones?
Yeah, it's good. Stop whipping me. But no.
More 50 Shades of Grey than Indiana Jones, I think.
That's a crossover we could do. 50 Shades of Indiana. But, you know, I always wanted to be him. I thought it was a fantastic trilogy. I was still, at this moment in time, put it as a trilogy. I can't let that fourth film taint my love for this trilogy. And he's just a character that you just want to be.
What, one of the funny things about it is, before the films came out, if you would have said to someone, we want to have this cool, iconic character, oh yeah, what's his job? Oh, he's an archaeologist. What?
Yeah, do one.
who's ever going to think that that's going to be a cool character? But, you know, he was.
I know. What a great guy as well, Harrison Ford. He's made for that role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Indy Man is an absolute genius. I know you're not the biggest Indiana Jones fan.
No, I mean, but the fault of that doesn't lie with the character. You know, I love Harrison Ford in everything, mm-hmm. and I think he's great as Indy. I just don't particularly care for those films in general because I came to them too late. I was too old to appreciate them, I think.
Fair enough.
That's fair.
What's your second one then, Adam?
My second one, staying along the lines of the first choice, and Ben even mentioned the second choice, Sarah Connor.
I wonder why you were a bit quiet when I said that.
Yeah, Sarah Connor. Again, another fantastic creation. Mm-hmm. And it's all about that kind of development, that shift, and the way she goes from, like you said, the meek, sort of feeble damsel in distress to this stone-cold badass in T2. I mean, she starts off T2 a bit kind of nervous that we see her in the asylum. She's a bit, you know, she's closed away. But the moment she realises that the Terminators are back and she can do something about Skynet, that shift in her character, just in that film, as well, the shift in the mentality, the shift in the... And it's just so interesting. It's like, what would someone who had been through that come out the other end looking like?
Yeah.
And Linda Hamilton plays it perfectly.
Well, you come out looking like Daenerys from Game of Thrones. Not only is it a mental shift with that character, it's a physical shift. Because if you see Linda Hamilton in T2, she's so wiry and just, she's like a Marine or something. But you've definitely got a type, haven't you, Adam, for those two choices?
I think strong female characters in films need a bit of representation.
Great choice.
Good that we can talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to go this whole episode without saying superb. I listened to the last episode. I said it 17 times on the topic. I'm really trying not to say it. So that's it now. If I do it again, let me know.
Yeah, we'll just give you a slap.
Yeah, can we hit you?
Also, someone on Twitter said, please can you not swear because my daughter wants to listen to the Beetlejuice part. So I think we said one F word already, but if we can try.
Well, what we'll do is we'll save the We'll do the swearing, but then for the Beetlejuice part, yeah, we won't.
That's perfect.
Okay, we'll try.
I think that's
we'll
fair.
What's your next one, Ben?
Don't swear.
Do you know what? I don't know that I can talk about this character without swearing, because it's Begbie from Trainspotting.
Incredible.
And 90% of his dialogue is effing and jeffing.
Such an iconic character.
It's amazing. And that's the thing I think I'm most excited about for the Trainspotting sequel, just seeing Robert Carlyle be back in Begbie's shoes again, because he's just a laugh-out-loud, hilarious character. It was one of them that the character was good in the book, but he really brought something extra to it, Carlyle, and just made it leap out of the screen. Love Begbie. Love the way he just F's and Jeff's about everything. I wanted to do a quote. I've quoted it on a previous episode.
Go for it, and we can do it later.
One of the greatest lines in the history of film is, it was fucking obvious that was going to fuck some.
I'll do the beeps.
Go get the beeps in there. Yeah.
Lovely. Right, my next one is, I've watched it recently again, and it made me then add this in and take another off. Tyler Durden for Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of Brad Pitt's side of the role. I've made a couple of notes to remind myself that he's not a nice man. You know, he'll basically steal your woman, sleep with her, make soap out of fat. And I even put in here that he'll then use that to make bombs and he'll beat you to a pulp.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I just love that character that Brad Pitt portrays.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way that he's just that guy that you probably want to be. He's just an absolute legend.
Yeah.
And the way that Brad Pitt acts, I've never seen him match that performance for me. It's absolutely superb. From the moment he walks in, and he's even when he gives that big speech at the start of the Fight Club, all the rules and stuff, I'm just mesmerised. Even though I've seen the film 10 times, I'm still watching every word he says. I absolutely love that character, and I can't leave him off the list.
And he just looks cool as hell in that film.
Those glasses,
he's got the glasses, got the leather jacket, the short spiky hair, the bit when you first see him fighting and he is cut, he is absolutely ripped. Yeah, he just looks like such a badass.
But even later on in the film, when he's just there in a big fluffy nightgown, which is white with hearts on or something, I was just sitting there going, no one else looks as cool as that in a gown than you. It's such a great film.
It is.
And he's kind of like, for me, the modern man that people would want to be,
mm-hmm.
not the James Bond type.
Yeah.
It's true. You'd rather be him than James Bond.
It says something about your psyche. I don't want to delve into that.
You'd rather be the villain than the hero.
But yeah, and I it was so nice to revisit the film. It took out one of my top three, so fair play.
I'm intrigued to know what it's taken out. We'll come back to that at the end. I want to know what missed the cut.
Adam, last one.
Last one. Only ever going to be one choice. Coolest dude in the galaxy, Han Solo.
Nice.
Just, especially after watching Empire last week,
yeah.
it cemented the whole thing for me. It's just like, Han Solo is the coolest dude in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. There is nothing can compare to him the way he is. Just from his introduction, Han shot first.
Oh, yeah.
I don't give a fuck what anyone says.
We all know that's
Han shot first, and that made him cooler.
Yeah.
He was not willing to pussy around.
Mm-hmm.
He was killing this bounty hunter there and then. So, then, you mentioned it last week, one of the best improvised lines in history.
Mm-hmm.
I love you. I know.
Amazing.
I mean, is there anyone as cool in film as Han Solo? Yeah.
He's an absolute
badass. I can't argue. I want, not as Indiana Jones, but you just want to be him. You want that gun. You want that kind of waistcoat with mm-hmm. the white. He just looks ace.
It falls back to this point about Harrison Ford, like, he's cool in everything he does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even when we look at the latest trailers now, and he looks like he's an old man.
Yeah.
But he still looks like he's getting one of the coolest dudes in the galaxy.
Good Lord, I can't wait.
The best bit of the whole trailer is just him saying, Chewie, we're home. You're like, look at him.
Yeah.
He's still cool as.
Good Lord.
Let's not go on an episode 7 jizz fest.
Another one.
We did an hour of it last time, didn't we?
I listened back and we absolutely literally spaffed our load, but it was worth it. And on the next episode, you're going to get that for an hour and a half. So.
Yeah, just a bit, yeah.
So,
well done, Harrison. You've got two out of
Han Solo.
Five.
Yeah, very cool. My last one, I think, is probably my only, what I would consider an obvious choice. It's Christoph Waltz as Hans Lander from Inglourious Basterds. Probably my favourite villain, I think. Just how he can be simultaneously incredibly menacing, but also incredibly funny. And one of the things that encompasses that is the opening scene, where he's in that French guy's shack, and the way he's speaking to him, just deliberately and carefully, just full of menace. And then he pulls out that pipe that looks like an Alpine horn, and it just deflates the tension. But then the tension ratchets back up again when, you know he knows that the Jews are under the floorboards. It's a phenomenal performance. And then even things like, that's a bingo! And again, just deflates the tension of this serious guy. And I love the way it ends. I love how he thinks he's going to be able to get away with it in the end, and then they cut the swastika in his head. But it's, I, like most people, especially in the English-speaking world, had never heard of Christoph Waltz before that film. Never seen him in anything, didn't know who the hell he was. He was a revelation, came out of nowhere. Brilliant actor, amazing, indelible performance, hell of a character.
Is it 2 Academy Awards now?
Yeah, because he won for Django Unchained as well,
And that's 2 in about, would have been 10 years of Hollywood or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if he'd done an English-speaking film before.
No, I think Inglourious may have been the first, about 2009. Was 2009, 2010.
Yeah, and then like 3-4 years later, or whatever it was, he won again for Django Unchained. And
he'll win again, whatever he does next.
Most likely, yeah.
My final choice, Robert Shaw playing Quint in Jaws.
Excellent.
I just thought to myself again, watching a film as a kid, growing up, what a badass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From the moment he walks on the screen and he has his nails running down the blackboard, that's his entrance, I'm here. You don't really care much about his backstory. He starts talking some gibberish, but you're infatuated by him. Mm. He then tells us the story about how he will catch this, but he wants the right money and goes off. And even the way he dies is great. He fails. He doesn't actually, he's the most trained guy there.
Yeah.
But he doesn't actually catch the shark. But the way he gets eaten, he goes out and you're kind of cheering for him, like, well done, you did everything. But we've talked about it, and I won't bore people too much. His speech when he's on the boat talking about... I think some of that was improvised. Not all of it, but amazing.
He was supposed to be off his face.
He was pissed off as well. He was supposed to be a nightmare to work with. He'd turn up to set literally off his face. But, him and Hooper together, their chemistry and everything. But he, for me, is... If I could be any actor and be in the role, that would be it. It's just absolutely mesmerising from the moment he comes on till he dies.
I'll be honest, it'd be a different film with you in it.
It'd be dreadful.
I don't think you'd bring the gravitas.
Yeah, I don't think at all.
His accent, I loved his accent, because he had what you would kind of think of as a stereotypical, almost sort of pirate voice. Like, talking about the sea and I love Quint so much.
And the fact that he didn't go off and do many films afterwards, and obviously he died quite young, he kind of has that legacy of being that star. He didn't go and ruin, tarnish it, and do loads of sellout shit.
Yeah.
Like, imagine Meet the Parents with him. It would not work. So he's number one for me.
Excellent work. So what was the one that was beaten out for you then, Mark?
Marty McFly.
Oh, yeah. I am surprised you didn't have that.
He was just there and he was cemented, but then I watched Fight Club again and I thought, I'm sorry, Marty, I'd rather have Tyler this time.
Yeah. And I assume that Johnny from The Room was number 4 or number 5 for you, isn't it?
Oh, is it a top... I thought it was a top 4. I was about to say my number 1 of all time. Yeah, Johnny's got time to, let's see what he does in the next few years.
And then... it's about the character.
Yeah.
Are we saying, like, after The Room 2, once we've done that, maybe he can kick himself into that sort of top level?
Could do.
Do you guys want to hear some of the ones from social media?
Yes.
Not really.
We asked Gemma, Popcorn Heart, Frank from The Naked Gun.
Oh, nice,
Frank Drebin. Steery.
Marge from Fargo.
Oh, yeah.
Good old Marge Gunderson.
And is it Kayser from The Usual Suspects?
Kayser Soze.
There we go.
Kayser.
I got my mispronunciation out of the way. Less than 15 minutes gone, so there we go.
Kayser.
Lisa, which is Queens of the Stone Age fan 66.
Nice. I like her already.
Ripley. Tangina from Poltergeist and Ash from Evil Dead.
Nice.
Very, very cool. Yeah. Joshua Taylor Smith, Alice from Resident Evil, Jigsaw from Saw.
Interesting.
And Sean from Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, nice.
Very nice. Healtown USA, Darth Vader.
A pretty obvious one, but yeah, can't
Marty
can't
McFly
argue.
And Thunderlips.
From Rocky 3.
Nice variety. Couple more. Daniel Harding has gone for Gandalf.
Shame.
Indiana Jones. And one that I thought you might pick, The Dude.
Yeah,
The Dude was close.
Mm-hmm.
And very final one, Will Vaughn with The Joker from The Dark Knight, which would go against what you said. Tommy from Goodfellas. And Uncle Buck.
Oh, Uncle Buck was a great character. Oh,
that could have made it in mine, actually. Right, next topic.
So it's me. I've had a bit of thought about this, and I thought, would Star Wars be in the next next episode for us. Just spoiler alert, you know, we're going to be reviewing Star Wars next. Mm-hmm. I wanted to pick something that encompassed franchises.
Okay.
So I want your top three worst franchises in cinema right now. You know, stuff that you've looked at and thought, not only how did that get a film, how did that get one, two, three more?
Yeah. And what I need to say at this point is, Mark, you can't have the Beverly Hills Chihuahua films because we know that you have them on Steelbook. So you can't pretend you don't like them because we know that you do.
So top three worst franchises.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see Bridge of Spies. It's a new film directed by Steven Spielberg, co-written by the Coen brothers and starring Tom Hanks. The plot of the film is that it's a true story, actually, and it's about a Russian spy being captured in New York in the mid-60s, I believe it was. And because the Americans wanted to show to the Russians that they are a nation that cares about people and cares about due process, they hire a good lawyer to look after this Russian spy. They bring in Tom Hanks' character, who is by trade an insurance lawyer, but they think he's the man for the job. He then not only has to defend this Russian spy, but becomes embroiled in a spy swap when an American spy crash lands his U-2 spy plane in Russia. And then it's all about negotiating one for the other. And I've made that sound really dull and really dry and really boring, but it's a true story and it's very, very interesting. Now, Mark, I want to throw this to you first. You are a big fan of Spielberg and you are a big fan of Hanks. What do you think of this in terms of a new collaboration from the two? They haven't done anything together for a while. So what did you think to this as a new collaboration between Spielberg and Hanks?
It felt great. It felt fresh. It felt like I hadn't seen this performance from him for a long, long time. Mm. Quite a serious role. And he's kind of been out of the limelight for a while. So to return with the master director himself and know that they have a great partnership together, I felt like I was watching a classic when I was sat in the cinema. And I just, it was a 2-hour, 12-minute film and it felt like an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I loved seeing them working together again. And I just think, thank you.
And where do you think this sits, Adam, alongside their other collaborations, things like Saving Private Ryan, Catch Me If You Can?
I thought this was tedious and dull.
Wow. Wow.
Tell us what you really think, pal.
No, I was so bored.
Wow.
This is good.
Wow. It's rare that we have diametrically opposed opinions, so it's this is interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was really boring. I thought nothing really happened for great deals of the film. I literally sat there thinking, this is not Spielberg and Hanks. Like, I understand they're trying to do something different, and that's fine. But one thing that really got me at the end, and I'm not going to, you know, no spoilers alert really here, but it tells you kind of what happens to everyone at the end. And one of the things it mentions is that Jay Donovan, the lawyer played by Tom Hanks, went on to one of their sort of major hostage negotiators, and he actually went and met with Fidel Castro for the Bay of Pigs invasion, negotiate the release of X amount of prisoners there.
Like 9,000, I think you got,
That would have been more interesting. Why don't you do that?
Yeah, I take your point that maybe it would have been a better story if there were 9,000 people at risk rather than
I just mean
two.
The idea that like Fidel Castro, you know, that someone like that was a much more interesting figure to look at.
Mm.
I just thought that nothing was happening. I literally, it was just these negotiations. I understand there was a certain amount of It just felt to me like it's, oh, look at America, we're the freedom fighters of the world again. Mm. And I'm fed up with films like that. I don't want to see films where people go, oh, isn't America great? Look at America.
Mm.
I'm just bored with seeing stuff like that. And for me, the only sort of poignancy of this film was the fact that it showed the strain on Germany during the East and West's Cold War.
Yeah.
Because they're a victim that aren't ever really looked at just because of how fresh it was in the world's mind after World War II of what Germany had done.
Mm-hmm.
No one thought of the people who were being, you know, shot at the walls as they were trying to get across and things like that. And at least it cast a reflection on that.
That's true, actually. It is one of those things that you don't hear or see a lot about, the trauma of the East and West in Germany, because, you know, people just were still thinking of them as Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Let them suffer, I think, was kind of the policy. That's interesting. I'm surprised that you have such a visceral negative reaction to it. I really liked it. I think we've discussed before that I like anything to do with spycraft. Now, this doesn't really have a lot to do with spycraft. It's more of a legal drama than anything else. But I really enjoyed it. We've discussed previously that I'm kind of warm or lukewarm on Spielberg. It's because when I think of Spielberg, I tend to think of his 80s coming-of-age shite that I just have no interest in, that I can't stand those kind of films. But what I've found over the years is that whenever he gets involved in historical drama, I love it. Saving Private Ryan, amazing. Brilliant. Munich, amazing. It's those kind of films, and that's where this one fits. That's the part of his canon that this one fits into, another historical drama. And I think he nails it. He nails the tone. The direction is flawless, as you would expect. He brings in his old bestie, Hanks. For me, the masterstroke, however, was casting Mark Rylance as the Russian spy. Now, Mark Rylance is known in acting circles as a god. But he's a theatre actor primarily. He very rarely does TV and film. Once every couple of years, he'll pop up and do something, usually a minor character. But he's won, I think, 3 Tony Awards and Olivier Awards. He's won everything you can win on the stage. So to get him in as this Russian spy was a great bit of casting, and he's phenomenal. I will bet cash money now that he'll be nominated for Best Supporting Actor for that performance. Absolutely superb.
I can't argue. One of my things I put down is that I felt he was fascinating to watch from the moment he walked on the screen. He made me laugh, even at the most serious times of the film. He kept saying that one line, like, well, should I have to? Or, you know,
does it help?
Would it
does
help?
Yeah.
Because Hanks' character says to him, you don't seem worried. Would it help?
Yeah, and he does it about 4 times in the film. But I was chuckling away. I heard you laughing a few times.
Yeah,
it was the most serious times. And I've not seen much of him in before. Mm. And I loved his accent. I loved the way he portrayed himself. And I just thought, I was mesmerised. I thought this guy should do more. I want to see him on screen a lot.
It was funny, actually. You mentioned his accent there. I wasn't entirely sure what he was going for, but I've done a bit of research about this guy. His name is...
Abel.
Yeah, Rudolf Abel. Done a bit of research about him today. And his family were Russians, but they, because of whatever was going on in Russia at the time, they were exiled and they moved to Newcastle.
Yep.
So that's why he had this slightly offbeat accent. And he spent some time living in Scotland. So that's why Rylance's accent was sort of a weird, ever so slightly Russian, kind of Scottish, Northern English accent. But
it's
apparently he nailed
Irish.
It.
Irish.
Yeah. He's British somehow.
He definitely sounded Scottishy to me,
but I liked it. And yeah. I just thought, you know, he's so strong, and every time he's on camera, I just was drawn to him. And I just now don't know what he'll go. I mean, obviously, he can't go and do a lot of roles because he's getting on, and you know, he's not going to do young. But I'd like to see what he does next. This as a serious acting piece, you say, is very hard to get hold of.
Yeah, well, he's a theatre actor. Yeah. I don't know that he's going to use this as a stepping stone to go and do Transformers 12.
He doesn't really
12.
Need to,
he doesn't
does
care.
He? Yeah.
He's a theatre acting is his love.
Yeah.
He'll do film and TV when a big role comes across.
It'd be very interesting if he did then go for the role in Transformers 6 or whatever. Mm.
It'd be very odd. I've heard that he's going to be in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, playing Bebop.
Oh, I heard it was Kerrang. One of the film's highlights for me was the photography and the cinematography. I thought it was beautiful. Uh-huh. And the way it made Germany look and everything, all the snow and everything. I was just sat there going, this already looks like a film that you'll watch in 10 years and won't look dated.
Mm.
You know, it looks perfect. The amount of time and detail they put into all the costumes and the set design and the cars, and it's just incredible.
Yeah.
You don't get this much love for films now. And it's obviously Spielberg. He doesn't come along and cut corners and go, oh, do you know what? I'll just do some CGI. He gets 500 people there to be crowded and roaring at a courtroom or anything just to get that atmosphere. And no one else really spends that amount of time anymore. It's unbelievable the amount of detail he goes to, and all the old cars and the streets. It looked beautiful.
It would
also look really odd if he CGI'd a courtroom.
I bet you some directors would do that.
Michael Bay would do
that. Yeah, exactly.
It'd look like, you know, when you play like the old versions of FIFA,
and the
crowd is just the same 3 people replicated over and over.
But it was beautiful, and the lighting and everything. And it's one of those ones that I'll want to watch again on Blu-ray at home and really appreciate. I thought it looked superb.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that the acting performances in it are generally solid. Like there's nothing to pick at there for me. The direction, again, the cinematography, like you said, all great. Mm. And they showed, like I said, they showed East Germany and West Germany as opposite ends of the spectrum. You could see that. You could get that across when you saw it. I just found the subject matter tedious and boring.
Not a lot we can say about that.
And to be honest, it's a big issue.
Yeah. Well, if you're not grabbed, if it doesn't grab you, then what can you do? You can't really get over that, can you?
No.
But everything else, like you say, Mark Rylance, Tom Hanks, they were both perfect.
They were. I think one of my The few negatives I have with the film is that they were the only two characters that really had any definition. Yeah. So you had Amy Ryan playing Tom Hanks' wife, who us Office fans know as Holly Flax, and she's in about three scenes and doesn't really contribute much through no fault of her own. Mm-hmm. You've then got the fella who's in absolutely bloody everything, you know what I mean? The guy from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Jesse Plemons.
Jesse Plemons is in it again, but he's in, like, again, three scenes, has about four lines.
He's literally in absolutely every film right now.
Every film. Good on him. And TV shows. In Fargo as well, isn't he? Good season two. He's everywhere. And he's a very good actor. But he's wasted. Mm. They only spent time building up the two main characters.
And it's not for lack of characters. There's a lot of people in this film. It's just they're the only two that are ever given any kind of development.
Yeah, even the American spy who crash lands in Russia is given short shrift. You don't really see much of him at all. He's a bit of a cipher. Mm.
So fair play to the two main actors that stole the show for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Tom Hanks, I thought, was absolutely superb. He did make me miss him on screen. He hasn't done a lot for a while.
Mm.
And it was just really refreshing to see him. And I absolutely love him from the days he did Big and The Burbs.
Joe Bless is the welcome.
And then he ruined it for you with Forrest Gump, which we won't talk about.
Took a long time for him to come back from that.
And he's just about repaired now. But it's absolutely stunning. And it's nice that we're not on the same page once. As, you know, we're not all loving the film or hating it. So it's good. I'll be interested to score this.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a bit surprised on Ben's. So I thought he'd have picked up more on the propaganda side of it.
Yeah, I guess so, but...
Well, the only torture scenes we see are the Russians torturing the American. We don't see anything on the Americans torturing the Russian side.
No, that's true, but I think the fact that the main Russian is the spy, is Abel, and he comes across as just a thoroughly bloody lovely chap, I thought that kind of counterbalanced it. You know, they could have portrayed him as a dick who had no right being represented well by Tom Hanks, but he didn't. He was a great guy. And one of the things they took pains to point out was, yes, he's an enemy of America, but there are people in Russia who are Americans doing the exact same thing. It's just a job. Their guys are doing it, our guys are doing it. And I like the way they made that comparison. It wasn't just, you know, evil Russians are spies. No, American spies exist as well. And they pointed that out. So I don't think it was pure propaganda. It was no American Sniper, for Christ's
sake. Yeah, that was a propaganda piece.
Yeah.
Do you want to score this? I'm happy to score it.
I want Adam to score it first.
4.
Yowza.
Whoa.
Good Lord. Mark?
7.
Have a word.
It's 7 for me as well, which is 28. 6. Oh, fucking hell.
It's 7 and 7. 28. 7 and 7 is 14, plus is 4 is 18, divided by 3, 6.
6, yeah.
Whoa.
Have a word.
Let's hope Star Wars can top that. It's time to announce the winner of probably the biggest, best prize we've ever given away on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Apple Watch from our good friends at Universal. I can't believe this. We've had thousands of entries, absolutely ridiculous amounts, but we can only have one winner, and the winner is Matthew Oakley on Facebook.
Former Leicester City footballer Matt Oakley.
Is that him?
No, it's Matthew Oakley, and he doesn't look like a footballer at all. But what we did is we ran a competition for the Steve Jobs episode, and all we had to ask was, what was the date of birth of Steve Jobs? Not far off me, actually. February the 24th, 1955.
I didn't know you were that old.
I know. I look good. It's this face cream I use.
It's bunk.
Now, I would like to bring a new competition to the table.
We've got something else?
Yeah.
Is it as good as an Apple Watch?
It's not, but it's... bloody good.
You can win it anyway, yeah. So come on, guys.
So, thanks to our good friends at Universal again,
mm-hmm.
They're giving us free prize bundles for the new film Krampus, which is coming out at Christmas, which looks quite scary.
Oh, you undersold it. That is as good as an Apple Watch.
It's bloody good. Now, with this bundle, you get a woolly winter jumper, which is great for, you know, this cold time. You get gloves, you get a scarf, you get a bag, and you get a beanie. And I'm not going to lie, I've had one of the jumpers and they're bloody lovely. They are bloody, bloody lovely. So I think what we'll do is we'll tie in a competition to go with the film Krampus.
Yeah.
So Tom in the film is played by Adam Scott. All we want you to do is let us know of the famous TV series that Adam Scott is in as Ben Wyatt. What's the TV series? You tweet us, you Facebook, you Instagram us, you email us. Just go on skipthend.co.uk, you let us know. And we'll announce the winner of the three people on the Star Wars Christmas special in 2 weeks' time.
only is it my favourite segment because it's the one I always introduce, it's genuinely my favourite segment. It's Skip Back in Time. So this time, we're skipping back to 1996, guys. Good year?
It is a good year. Strong year, 96.
Strong
the
year.
The 90s are strong.
So who wants it first?
This is taking a turn. You can have it first, Mark. I don't want it at all.
I will go first with Fargo.
Yeah, me too.
Good.
So you both have it at the same time.
I love this film. Coen brothers are genius, and Steve Buscemi in this film is superb.
Steve Buscemi.
I've actually heard it both ways. I would say Buscemi. Yeah.
Okay, well, Steve is very good in this film. And I just love this film. I love how gritty it is. We talked about the blood in the snow.
Yeah.
The cinematography, the writing, everything about this film is perfect. And the Coen brothers, for me, if I had to do a top three, this is definitely in their top kind of... It might be their best piece of work for me. It's a difficult one. I change it's as so, I go on.
It's, that's, a t- that's, a,
that's a topic a for concept. Another day.
Yeah, exactly.
But I absolutely love this film, and I just... Everything about it. What's the woman's name in real life?
Frances McDormand.
She is super. Didn't say superb. She's super, and I love her performance, and I just... Is there a better film out there than this in this year, really?
There's not.
There's a lot of great films. Well, have you gone for this as well?
Yes! We've done it!
We've never done that before.
This is the first.
I'm absolutely delighted by that.
There's no choice. I do generally think this could be the Coen Brothers' best piece as well. And that is up against some very good competition. But yeah, Fargo is by far the best film of this year. And it was a pretty difficult choice for me to start with. I was looking at a couple of films that were kind of made this year. And I just realised that Fargo, it was head and shoulders above everything else.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was looking at the list thinking there's a lot of great films, genuinely there are, but this one, it's something else altogether. You've mentioned Frances McDormand there, Mark, but William H. Macy as well.
Yeah. So good.
Absolutely brilliant.
I was just Googling what his name was. I hadn't wrote it down, but what a great performance from start to finish.
Yeah. It is, and it's the smiley character that's just, it's quite haunting.
Yeah.
With what's going on, it just doesn't feel like it's encompassing with the theme of the film, but it's just it just adds to it. It's perfect.
Dialogue perfect.
Yeah.
Script perfect.
Cinematography
everything.
Looks beautiful. That film.
And the TV series is fantastic too.
And it has no right to be. When they first came out and said we're going to do a TV series of Fargo, the Coens aren't involved. They gave it their blessing, but they're not directly involved. I'm thinking this is going to be a fucking disaster.
Especially
it's amazing.
About 19 years.
And it's absolutely amazing. And they subtly linked the show back to the film. It's entirely its own thing. It hasn't traded too much on the memory of the film, but there are just a few little hints and links. I think it's absolutely brilliant that they've been able to expand what is a great universe anyway.
And I love the fact that Series 2, I mean, we've not had many episodes in the UK yet, but what I have seen, it's up there with Series 1, and it usually starts to, you know, derail a bit, but I'm loving it. So yeah, it's absolutely superb. It's absolutely brilliant. And this is the first time we've ever all been on the same page. This is brilliant.
I had a feeling that at least two of us would have.
Because he didn't say, yes, I've got it straight away. Yeah. You were straight away, and I was like, oh, nearly.
Yeah.
Nearly.
I'm too busy making that joke about you both having it at the same time. So basically, all three are having us at the same time.
Lovely. I'm just going to skip straight to the social media to hear what the contenders were. Because there's a couple I thought maybe Ben would choose. So we've got Steve Toogood with Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, great film.
Let's give Adam Sandler credit for once. What a great film. Yeah, how funny.
We do really hit him quite hard on this podcast.
Yeah.
But that is a very good film.
It is.
Very funny.
Phenomenal film.
The film I thought Ben might choose, Andrew Dawson, Trainspotting.
Yeah, again, very good film.
Rick and Paul, Independence Day.
Not so much.
Den Dennis, The Long Kiss Goodnight.
That's
Samuel L. Jackson, isn't it?
Samuel L. Jackson and Gina Davis. It's an absolutely brilliant film. So underrated, under the radar film. Watch that.
Ben Fenlon has put, he can't decide, he just can't, between Fargo and Jingle All the Way. I mean, classic Arnie, you know what I mean?
Very similar.
It was the choice I had to make.
Yeah. Kendall Phillips, Scream. I mean, as an influential horror film, Wes Craven, superb. Fucking hell. Sarah Jesh from Dusk Till Dawn, that was up there for me.
Yeah.
And they put worst film, absolute bag of shy, Independence Day.
Anna Contradicting Pink, views on social media.
Anna Pink has put The Things You Do.
I don't know what that is.
This is a great one. Failed Steve. Muppet Treasure Island.
Never seen it. Never will.
One that I thought you might both have. Failed Steve. Muppet. I've just said that one.
You're a muppet,
I'm losing
mate.
It. Hangover Reviews, Space Jam. Space Jam has got to be a rewatch.
Christ. Space Jam is a great film, and it's got some of the greatest voice actors in the world in it.
And finally, Jim Burgess with Primal Fear. So, 1995 next time, and it's tricky.
Yeah.
Tricky, tricky, tricky.
Never do that again.
Our rewatch this episode is Beetlejuice. Now, this is a film that I watched a lot as a kid. It was one of my absolute favourites, and historically I have very good memories of it, but I realised not so long ago that I don't think I've seen it in 10, maybe 15 years. So it was interesting to go back, and this was a true rewatch. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, do we think the film holds up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I do. It wasn't as... I'm going to say it straight away. It wasn't as good as I remembered. Mm. But it was still very good. It just, I expect it to be absolutely mind-blowing and 10 out of 10, I love it. Oh, this is great.
Yeah.
I think maybe I've just, I haven't matured, no way. But I've, I just don't love it as much as I did.
Yeah.
But it definitely held up. I thought it looked great. I thought, you know.
Yeah, the interesting thing for me is I probably watched this film about 4 times before this rewatch. So yeah. A lot of it when I was a kid, like probably 3 times when I was a kid. Once when I was about probably 17, 18. And then now, and I found myself more appreciative now of certain things like the stop animation and how it's put together than the actual film itself.
Yeah, yeah. This is creativity at its best. Yeah. Well, like he was a genius.
This was when Tim Burton was good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Really good.
Yeah.
And I was reading a bit into it, and I was reading that obviously Tim Burton was quite disillusioned with Hollywood before this film. He'd done a few things that he wasn't really happy with. And this script came across his desk and he was the first to sign on for it because it's him all over.
Yeah.
You know, this is that wacky brand of just something completely different that is Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very, very interested to hear that. And I just think that certain aspects of it just didn't feel as mesmerizing as they used to.
Yeah.
Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I mean, I sat there watching it, thoroughly enjoying it, but thinking... I don't quite know why I have such great memories of this. It's not bad by any stretch. The thing that surprised me and that I had completely forgotten is that Beetlejuice really isn't in it that much.
No.
He doesn't show up for like half an hour. And even then, you see him a couple of times and then he only really turns up again right at the end. There's not a lot of the titular character at all.
The film's an hour and a half and it felt like about an hour. And like you said, he turns up and the film was literally... I couldn't believe it was over. It's one of the shortest films I've seen.
Mm.
But... I think it might be the fact that it's an 80s film, so I do love it. It's 1988. But it's that the fact is, what at that time, it was so wacky and out there and so kind of different. And it was testing probably a new style of humour that people hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
And because now we have seen a lot of films a bit like it, you know, we've had, especially his animated stuff he's done since, it's not really that wacky and out there. And I think we've all just kind of seen so much more. If we went back and watched this for the first time in 88, okay, I would only be 6, but you'd be loving it. This is so original. This is so great. Now we're like... Yeah, it's a bit like Batman, isn't it? It's a bit like Batman, you know. It's
we've grown accustomed to Tim Burton's style. Very, very obvious signature style. We're disillusioned with it now because we've seen it so much to the point now where he just churns out absolute shite like Alice in Wonderland. But back then, it was revolutionary. Yeah. It was different. No one was doing that.
I mean, at least it's stop animation, not CGI.
Yeah, always a bonus,
which is something you can look at, and it's just. It's so interesting to know how much time goes into that. I mean, when you look at stuff like Nightmare Before Christmas again, which is one of his, how much time that film took just to, you know, to do. And this is very much the same thing. In contrast to stuff like Alice in Wonderland, which was a lot of graphics, a lot of CGI. And like you said, I just wonder now whether it's a case of we've seen his style a lot and this no longer holds that.
Yeah. He seems to me that he doesn't have much new to offer now. He's fallen into a rut. I want to talk a bit about Michael Keaton. Even though I've said that Beetlejuice himself isn't in the film that much, this is still probably my favourite Michael Keaton role because it's so ballsy. He doesn't hold anything back. It's out there. Yeah. It's wild.
Have you seen Jack Frost?
Yes, you're right. That Jack Frost was a masterpiece. You're absolutely right. That was his best role. But I think he's just phenomenal in this.
Who else could you see play this? Yeah, no one. Yeah, no one else could play this part.
No.
It's utterly bizarre. And you find yourself wanting more of him because he's not in it that much.
Yeah. And I think that was part of it. I think that whole aspect about he doesn't get as much screen time as some of the other characters was the reason he was... it's not overdone.
Yeah.
Like a lot of Burton stuff can be.
Yeah, that's true. And especially because the character is so out there and it is a really big, bold performance. It could have grated had there been too much of it. I think someone else in the film who was great as well is a very young Winona Ryder. I think she was sort of 16, 17 when she was in this film. It's one of her first roles. And I think she's rather brilliant in this as well.
Yeah, and there's a lot of talk, obviously, about the sequel now that's coming in. And she's signed on to do it. Mm-hmm. And she had a lot of sort of words over the last sort of 10 years whenever it came up saying that Lydia Bennett was a big part of her life back then. It was one of her first roles, and how much she actually loves the character and how much she's still a part of her life now. So it's unsurprising that she signed on to the sequel, but it is a very good performance from her.
Oh, yeah. And it's interesting to see if they do go through with the sequel, especially now that Michael Keaton is having this sort of late career resurgence. He went maybe a decade in the wilderness of, you know, just doing bit parts here and there. And now all of a sudden, of course, he was nominated for an Oscar last year or earlier this year for Birdman. There's talk now that he's going to be nominated again for a new film he's in called Spotlight, which I think comes out in January in the UK, but in December, I think, in the States. And people are saying he's going to get a Best Supporting Actor nod for that. So I love the fact that he's having this resurgence. And so to then go back into Beetlejuice's shoes, I think will be very, very interesting. Yeah. Very intrigued by that.
Yeah, I mean, he said he would do it. He's... Yeah, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
He always said, didn't he, if Tim Burton was on board, I'd be on board.
Yeah.
So
it'll be really interesting to see what they do this time, because imagine if it came out now, it would be Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And it would be annoying.
Yeah.
And it is so over the top. And he would just, will he use loads and loads of CGI, or will it make it feel like the first film again?
I really hope it's sort of back to basics, stop motion animation, you know,
make
all
it
that
look
sort
cheap.
Of stuff.
Make it look, you know.
Yeah, you know, keep it as a piece with the first one.
Because the set design on this film was superb. When they actually go into the the street and the tree falls over, that whole model that you built in the house, they just that wouldn't get made now. They wouldn't be bothered. They'd just be like, oh, just leave it. It looks so good, and I just enjoyed seeing the right amount of kind of comedy with the amount of cockiness from Michael Keaton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He wasn't annoying, and I was actually surprised, because I've not seen this film for years, how long it took until he came on screen. I actually was like, this is getting on to 40 minutes and I'm sure he's in this.
Yeah.
But sequel, bring it on. It may have been a bit too long now, because like, Winona Ryder, how long has she been out of the picture now? I've not seen her in anything apart from stealing stuff.
Brilliant. That was like 15 years ago.
Well, that's the last time I heard her
she
name.
She was in Black Swan.
Oh, yeah. Very okay. good Yeah, but she's not done a lot.
She doesn't
kind of just faded
so
out.
Much, yeah. But I would love to see that sequel. I think one of the things I think we're all kind of agreeing with on here is that it's a film that's very easy to admire, even though we don't necessarily love it as much as we once did. There's a lot to admire
there is,
in terms of the craft.
It's the craft. It's the execution of the film more than the film itself necessarily nowadays. But the way it's put together is superb.
Yeah, and some of the other people in it as well, the main couple who die at the start of the film, spoiler alert, played by Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis.
Yeah.
And Alec Baldwin is about half the size he was then than he is now.
He looks about 12.
Yeah, he does look so young, doesn't
compared
he?
Compared to now.
And then Gina Davis, you forget how sort of a big star she was for a while there in films like that and League of Their Own and all that sort of stuff. She was a big name. I think she did some sort of pirate film that died on its arse and nearly ruined her career. But prior to that, she was an A-lister, you know, and she's very, very good, an excellent actress.
It's weird. I've kind of got this, I won't deny it, I've got this kind of real hate for Tim Burton at the moment. I just think he's just really ruined his legacy. But since we did the Death of Superman special and we saw the footage on there of him talking about this idea he had, and then visiting this film recently and we did Batman as a rewatch, my love's growing back. Mm. Even though it's having to go back to his early works, I am starting to be like, oh, you were a genius. And I can't really slag you off, because you did that and you printed your legacy. So if you do come back and make any more good films, and I think my concern is he might be doing is it Alice in Wonderland 2 next?
Yes. Yeah.
So he's going to piss me off and I'm going to hate him for a bit longer.
I mean, you wonder whether that whole Death of Superman Lives, or Superman Lives the film, and how that film kind of played out affected him.
Mm.
The death of Tim Burton.
In the way that because his films after that are just not good.
Well, we all know what the watershed moment of when he went from a good auteur to an absolute twat. It was Planet of the Apes,
which was about 2 years after it got Superman. He'd been working on Superman.
So don't put your wife in a film, because since then, it's gone downhill.
No more Helena Bonham Carter. No more Johnny Depp.
Get Michael Keaton back.
That's it.
Go back to stop animation.
Mm-hmm.
Get Rinoni in.
Rinoni. Get Rinoni.
Get Rinoni in.
He's great.
Do you want to score this?
Yeah.
I was thinking it's going to be a really, really high score when you said it. I was like, oh, yes, Beetlejuice. But it's good. I like it. It's 1988, so it automatically gets high score. Seven.
Yeah, it's a seven from me as well.
Yeah.
I wonder what's the average of 3 sevens?
Well, it's given still a great score. Earlier, it's probably about a 39.
So yeah, Beetlejuice, 7 out of 10.
Next rewatch time, guys. It's my choice.
Oh yeah.
Now on the next episode, we're obviously doing Star Wars, which we're going to be really, really happy for, I'm sure, and spend a lot of time on the review. But it is our Christmas episode because this episode goes out a week before Christmas. So I want to, you know, I think last year we did Die Hard.
We did.
And it was really good to watch something quite Christmassy. So again, I want to pick another Christmassy film. Something that we can have a bit of fun with. I want to have a few tins of certain ciders or beers that we can have.
Strongbow duck fruit.
So I just want to have fun with you guys and just enjoy myself. So on the next episode, we're going to watch Bad Santa.
Nice. Great choice. I love that film.
It's a great Christmas film. And you both... I'm going to say you're both not going to shit right for weeks.
I've just remembered what else we talked about on our last Christmas episode. It was Dumb and Dumber 2, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think Star Wars might just pip that.
I hope. To God. Star Wars.
And should we make it the uncut badder Santa that came out a couple of years later?
Yeah, let's go nuts.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Next episode, badder Santa.
Blockbuster video time.
Mm-hmm. Videos.
Is it videos?
Yeah, be careful. Hello.
Is that the lawyers?
Yeah, okay.
So it's time for Blockbuster videos. Now, this is our quiz for new listeners. Again, where have you been? What's going on? This is a quiz where I ask 5 questions each. It's all based around the letters of the alphabet. Mark and Ben this week are the contestants. So they'll be choosing a letter each. And the winner is the one who answers the most. If they both get 5 out of 5, there is a tiebreaker question as well.
Excellent.
I've actually thought ahead to do the tiebreaker
question. Good
work. As opposed to some people who didn't.
All right.
There's a lot lying on this game because if I don't win, I'm just not ever going to win anything because I've lost all the games so far.
So
if I win, it goes down to a...
Oh, rock, paper, scissors. So at the minute, I've won one round.
Yep.
And Adam's won one round. So this
I've got a lot to play for. No pressure here.
Nah.
So... who would like to go first?
Mark can go first.
Mark.
Remember how we have to ask for it as well. Can I have a tea, please, Adam?
Of course you can.
Thank you.
Which actress plays the character of April Wexler in a series of films surrounding a natural disaster?
Tara Reid?
Correct. Oh. And it is Sharknado.
Fanny face. Sorry, she's never had any work done.
Ben.
Yes. Can I have a P, please, Adam?
Which P is the fictional place in which the Hunger Games franchise is based?
Panem.
Correct.
Oh, it's tense. It's a wigwam and a teepee. Too brilliant. Tense.
Shame.
That joke didn't work the first time he said it about 6 months ago.
Listen back to that episode. Skip the end, or can you get it?
Mark.
Can I have a B, please, Adam?
Daniel, William and Stephen are all famous brothers from which acting family?
The Baldwins.
Correct.
I get told I look like one of them sometimes. True.
You wish.
No, now.
Ben.
Yes. Can I have a D, please, Adam?
That's an easy one. Which D is the character that Will Smith will be playing in the upcoming film, The Suicide Squad?
Deadshot.
Correct. 2-2. Oh, it's all Archbishop Desmond.
I very nearly said Deadpool then as well.
We have to take your first answer.
Good.
Can I have a S, please, Adam?
Which S is the name of a film in which Michael Fassbender portrays a man with a sex addiction?
Oh, my God. I'm going to throw this away. I don't know.
Can I answer for glory?
You can.
The answer to the question is shame.
Oh, you're joking.
Yeah, shame.
Oh, what? Oh, shame.
But Ben, this to take the lead.
Can I have an R, please, Adam?
Which famous actor did Doc Brown disbelieve could be president?
Ronald Reagan?
Correct.
Oh.
That's 3-2. Mark, you've got to get this right.
Oh, don't. I could get two more, yeah. Good. Can I have a C, please, Adam?
Tony Todd provided the voice for which famous horror character?
Carrie?
I know, it's Candyman.
Oh, Candyman.
I can't believe I know that and Mark doesn't. The horror king over here.
That'd be an easy one for you, I'm afraid.
I'm still laughing at Shame. Shame! The rewatch.
Can I have a Z, please, Adam?
How to win it.
Which Z is the daughter of famous comedy actor Robin Williams?
Sweet bloody Moses.
I know this.
I'm going to say it's something like Zendaya Williams.
It's not. Mark, would you like to answer for glory?
Zelda.
It is Zelda. Zelda Williams.
I need to get this right still. I like this. It's really
it's
good.
Now.
You're a good host, dude.
Thanks.
You're going to get some boxes for this. Oh, I've just said it. I've got to commit to it. Not Tommy ones, though. These ones. So. I don't know what letters are left. O. Sorry, can I have an O, please, Adam?
Mitch Martin and Bernard Campbell are characters from which comedy film?
Fuck's sake, my brain. Still Alice, literally. Honestly, my brain is frazzled and I can't think and it's on the tip of my tongue. I want to say it's that film that's really funny with Will Ferrell when he's running down naked in the street and stuff, but I can't remember what it's called. So I'm going to pass.
Old School.
That's the one.
It is the one. We're streaking through the quad.
I hate myself. So Ben's won.
Hey-o.
Would you like to go for a last letter?
Anyway? Yeah, why the hell not? Can I have an X, please, Adam?
An X?
Yeah.
Which rapper?
Exhibit. Are there any others?
Which rapper has appeared in films such as 8 Mile, Triple X, State of Union and Derailed?
And the car one, that was when they pimped my ride.
That wasn't a film.
Yeah, but it should be. Well done.
Thanks.
But this does come to one thing, that you've both won a round, haven't you? Previously? So is that 2-1 to you?
I think I've won two competitions now.
What was the last competition before this? Fan Movie Fortunes?
Fan Movie Fortunes before this, which I won.
And I won the rating game.
Yep.
Wow.
So you're doing well, Mark.
Would you like to hear the tiebreaker question?
Yeah.
Yeah, go on then.
How many words, beginning with V, does V use in his introductory monologue to Evie in V for Vendetta?
I'm going to go with 4.
9.
It's 49.
Wow!
Well, between us, we got the 4 and the 9.
Right, guys. My friend's going to be coming on the episode in 2 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I got him, he was my best man at my wedding. He's one of my best friends.
Yeah.
But I believe that if Star Wars isn't good, we're actually going to capture a guy crying and having a breakdown live on a podcast.
So you're talking about your friend Rich, who we know as well.
Yeah.
There is going to be a Tim Bisley from Spaced meltdown, isn't there,
yes.
If this film isn't good.
But also, I quite like the idea that if it's amazing and is up there with the original trilogy films, we might get a guy crying of happiness.
Yeah.
Because this guy has been scarred by the prequel, so I'm really looking forward to this.
Either way, you might get some crying.
But what's really good is that we can use him as a host for the next game.
Okay.
So what I'm thinking of is a lot of people have been going on about our old ones, bring them back. As it's Christmas, we're going to give the people what they want. We're going to bring back a family favourite game show.
Yeah.
Can't tell you what it is yet.
Ooh.
But hopefully one of us will win and have good fortune.
Brilliant.
So,
is it also still around movies?
Yes. So on the next episode, it'll be us three as a one-off playing against each other.
Yep.
We'll make it quite festive.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be the host, and there'll be an overall winner for the end of the year. That'll be great. And there'll be a prize up for grabs.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a brand new game show in 2016 on our first episode in January. Excellent. Sound good?
Yeah. And not only is Rich here for the review and also for the game show, he's going to be sitting in for the whole episode.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's
a fourth opinion.
He will only be our second ever live guest after old Popcorn Heart Gemma. So that'll be interesting. Yeah,
it's going to be a lot of testosterone, but it'll be good.
Indeed.
So, next time, a game show which is for the family. We're almost at the end of the episode, but just before we are, let's have some listener questions. Start with 23.5, which is at 23.5 films. He's curious to know, how many films do each of us watch on average a week? Are we massive film buffs or are we just all talk?
I'd say probably 4 or 5 a week I would watch.
Yeah.
There or thereabouts.
I've been going through binge watching at the weekends, so 2 or 3, and we always watch one for the film and then a rewatch.
Yeah.
But I am trying at the moment to watch one every night in bed, and I've been watching the classics. So recently I watched Fight Club, American History X. I've been going through all the older films. So I'd probably say on average about 8 a week.
Because this is another interesting thing. Like you can watch 10 films a week.
Yeah.
But if it's the same films over and over again.
Yeah, 7 of those are The Thing. Or Big.
So, I mean, I probably watch about, same as you, about 4 or 5 maybe a week.
Yeah. I reckon you watch more than that, Ben. I know at weekends when we text, you're like, I've just watched this film. You probably watch about 5 at the weekend.
I do binge on like a Saturday or a Sunday, that's true. If I'm not out with the football or something, I watch a lot of movies. Yeah.
So, yeah. Junaid Hussain, which is @J_Hussain. Have films become too long just for the sake of it, i.e. we don't see many under 90-minute films anymore? Ooh,
I don't know that they're too long for the sake of it. I think there are a lot of films that are needlessly long these days. But then again, there are some films that don't contain the story in 90 minutes and you wish they had an extra 20.
I think that's a key point there as well, I think. Because if you look at it by studios generally want that 90-minute mark as the last extremity. You know, that 90 minutes is the furthest you push it between the sort of 120 mark and the 130, because they obviously want people in and out and more screenings of that film. So I don't think they're too long for the sake of being too long. I think certain directors have visions and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
I mean, what's the running time of Hateful Eight?
3 hours, 12 minutes or something. It's literally getting on for nearly 3.5 hours.
We said this coming out of the cinema, didn't we? Yeah. After Bridge of Spies. What studio is going to tell Tarantino to trim his film down?
Exactly,
I think we have found ourselves on quite a few episodes recently saying it could have done with 10, 15 minutes chopping out of, but I don't know. It's a tough one, really.
But then there's other ones where we're talking, we'll say that we needed next.
Yeah.
You know, why did they not include this bit of story? Or why didn't they go into that in too much detail?
I think Hobbit's too long.
Yeah, I think The Martian could have been longer. Because I've read the book and I know what they cut out, I think that film could have stood to be another 20 minutes longer.
I'm the same with Mac and Me. I wanted to know more about the family. We only got to know about Mac. I mean, what is his dad doing? Anyway, we'll come back to that in the sequel. At Grenchy Prime. Does popular opinion affect how you feel about a film?
Not at all.
Do you know what? I think we're the opposite. I think that one thing I will say, and this isn't like blowing our own trumpet, but we just say what we really think.
Yeah.
And we really do. And people will say to me, I can't believe you said that you didn't like this film. It's like, but we didn't.
Yeah.
And people are always surprised by that, the fact we didn't like Jurassic World. People say to me, how did you say that? I mean, that's the biggest film of the year. Well, we didn't like it. We're not afraid to say what we think.
No. I think the one instance where it kind of does have an effect on us is when it comes to lowering expectations.
Yeah.
Sometimes if there's a film that's been hyped to hell and then the reviews start coming in and they're not great, it calms us down. It lowers our expectations and we go into it with a more even keel. So sometimes it does. But generally, you know, we're not swayed. We're not going to say a film is good just because the world at large says it's good. We're going to tell you what we think.
Did Paramount send that check through this week?
It bounced.
Yes, I've got it here.
At Carlos05, do you think the Star Wars marketing campaign is starting to give people a slight Star Wars fatigue already, considering the film's not been shown yet?
Nope.
Not for me.
No.
I want more.
I like the way as well they're not giving a lot away. Okay, we're on TV spot number 14 at the moment, but it's pretty similar to the same footage, just in a different order. And it doesn't seem like, we haven't even seen the baddie yet.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, everything that they've released, and it seems like we've seen a lot of footage now, but everything we think we know is pure guesswork.
Yeah.
As you said, we've not seen Andy Serkis's villain.
No. Nope.
We don't really know what the plot is. There is a lot we can infer from what we've read or the TV spots we've seen, but we don't know a goddamn thing.
Me and Ben sat there on Saturday before the football with a group of lads that we know that we go to the football with quite a bit. And we all have a different theory. on who Kylo Ren is, where Luke is, blah, 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 blah.
It's great.
But we know nothing. It's all just guesswork.
Yeah. I love the fact
That's what's brilliant.
And that's what the internet's like. Oh, Luke is definitely Kylo Ren. No, he's not. You know, he's definitely not in this film. He's going to be in episode 8, people are saying now. He's not even in this film. I love it.
Yeah. God damn, I can't wait.
And in 2 weeks, find out. Travis from Real Comic Heroes. Serious question. Who will Nick Cage play in Mac and Me 2? Are we ready to reveal the big secret?
I'm not.
You're not ready to reveal it yet?
Right, is this why you were dropping hints about wanting to know more about Mac's dad?
should we say it now? Come on, the fans deserve an update.
I'm giving away too much.
We'll say no more.
We can't.
Someone's got some inside knowledge. He's you know, he knows something. Mm. How's he just pulled Nick Cage out of the air?
I'm going to be contacting the lawyers.
I want to get onto the studio because how that is leaked. That is
what I will say
as
well.
It's unprofessional.
It's unprofessional, isn't it?
This is
unprofessional, Miz. and that's what I want.
Well, I will say is that we've had to bick his head, and that famous haircut has gone. So just put your mind to, you know, imagine what. Why would he bald? Why?
Yeah. For fans of the Wicker Man, though, you know, be safe in the knowledge that he does randomly punch several women in the head. Yeah.
And he's lost 12 stone in weight for this part. So imagine a real skinny, bald fella.
12 stone.
Yeah. He's now invisible.
He's literally this tiny, real skinny.
He was
skinny.
About 14 stone already.
He's looking really alien-like. Kevin Holden, if you could choose a character from a movie who is merely a cameo and then make a movie on that character, who would you choose?
I'm going to do a dead obvious one here, and I think they actually are making a movie of him. It's Boba Fett.
Yeah.
It's such a small role in Empire, and, you know, from as far back as 1980, people have clambered to see more of him. And I think that is one of the films on the new slate of Star Wars.
Well, it's about 40, isn't it? Disney are literally doing everything.
Yeah.
Probably Matt Damon and Ben Affleck in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. I'd love to see those two. What was it, Will Hunting?
That sounds good. Yeah, that sounds really good. I'm going to go with... He's not... I want to get a film made for Floyd in True Romance.
Yeah, Floyd. Yeah.
Give me a film with that.
Yeah.
Or I've said it before, Matilda in Leon, but that would be more of a sequel now.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Not really a cameo, is it?
No.
The lead role.
Not at all. Yeah, that would be pretty good. Gemma's come with a question.
Ooh.
We'll allow it. Good old popcorn heart. So John Carpenter's announced that he'll be performing lots of his original scores at festivals. I'm going to the London date.
Nice.
Are there any other movie scores that you would like to see performed live?
Interstellar.
Love and all.
Just make you shit yourself in a festival. Middle of a field, just everyone just dropping their load.
I'm going to be super boring again and say Star Wars. And I think John Williams has done orchestral performances of the Star Wars score before.
Can we not have like a John Williams night so we get Jurassic Park as well and maybe Jaws? Have it all?
I think John Williams' scores would be fantastic.
They really would.
I'd like Back to the Future as well.
Yeah.
That'd be great. James Howe. He wants us as a group question to pick one each. And it's a tough one. I know Adam hates this sort of question, but we're going to give it him.
Oh, fuck's sake.
Nothing to do with games, don't worry.
Is it going to be one where Adam will refuse to answer because he doesn't like sequels or whatever?
Sort of.
Is it about sequels?
About remakes.
Oh, even worse. Sake.
He wants us to pick one each that is better than the original. Between us, so we've got a three.
A remake better than the original?
Yeah, and that's very, very, very hard.
Old Boy.
John. Oh.
Adam has been sacked live on air. Do you know, I still refuse to watch that film.
Good.
I'm going to steal Mark. I'm going to say The Thing.
Okay, yeah.
I've never seen the original.
No,
I'm just
assuming. It's blatantly going to be. I'm going to say The Fly.
Nice, yeah.
They're not better. All right, Batman Begins over the original Batman.
You can have it if you want.
That's not really a remake, though, is it? That's just a different telling of a story with a similar character.
I'm just like the fact we got an answer. Normally, I'm not giving an answer. That was good.
He usually throws his toys out the pram, doesn't he?
I don't throw my toys out the pram. How dare you? How dare you? Right, I'm going.
Proves it.
Couple more. Super Nerds UK have said, we've kind of touched on this before, so maybe we'll bring it back. What film would you like to see as a secret cinema event? Because I think we actually said Star Wars and they actually went and did it.
Yeah, that's true.
So we should sue them.
We didn't get any bunts for that, so I'm furious.
Sue them?
Yeah.
Can you answer it now on the spot or do you want to bring it back?
No, let's bring it back. And I'd quite like to hear Rich. I'd like to hear what he thinks of that. So let's have that one.
He'll probably say something like bloody Basic Instinct or something. Degrading.
Degrading. I'm not happy about that.
So, guys, I think on the last episode, we had a question of who we'd want to star in their own film of ourselves.
Yeah. Who would you want to play you in the movie of your life?
Have you done that?
I should Ben chose Chris Kamara.
I actually chose Craig Charles. I'm going to go with Leonardo DiCaprio and then have to brown him up a little bit.
Are we keeping that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Joaquin Phoenix. I think he's the only one who could pull the beard off.
That's true.
The guy that played Thingy on Lost. What's his name? Jacob.
Mark Pellegrino.
Yeah, the blonde hair guy.
Oh, yeah, Mark Pellegrino. Yeah, but he looks a bit
looks
like you.
Exactly like you.
But I would like, if I could, have Mark from the Room.
Greg Sestero.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That guy who did the intro for us.
Uh-huh. Yep. Or Corey Feldman, just because he's a cool guy. Doesn't look anything like me.
I don't know that he's a cool guy so much now. I think he was for a brief period in the 80s.
Is he the one from Glee that's dead?
That's Corey Monteith. Corey Feldman was in like every 80s film.
Goonies, Stand By Me, yeah, Gremlins.
I was joking, I know Corey Feldman.
Cool. Oh, I missed a question as well. Andy Sinclair. Do you guys actually listen to your own podcast?
No.
No. But it goes out as is. This is live. When you hear it, that's when we're recording it. We don't listen to any of it.
Truthfully, though, I think Mark and I are actually quite obsessive over it. I think you don't listen to it so much, do you? Because you don't really like your own voice.
I hate
do you, Adam?
My own voice.
Yeah.
I listen to it in the car now just to make sure the levels are okay. Yeah. I'm quite anal.
This is what I do. I download it on the Friday and I listen to it to and from work until it's done, just to make sure I'm happy with everything that was said.
Right.
It's a bit late by
I was going to say, at that point, mate. Yeah, can you take this bit out? No.
I listen to them religiously because I'm just incredibly vain and I just want to hear myself.
Also, guys.
Is that where all those used tissues
are? Ben, I like this little tune you do for this. Tweet of the week.
Tweet of the week.
I've got to actually put that with the music and make it. I'll do that for the next episode. I'll really try. So we've had a couple of... We've had a couple.
Because it's not Tweet of the Week, then, is it?
Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week. Okay, can we have a new one, then?
No.
Tweet of the Week.
Tweets of the Week. Tweets of the Week.
Choose one and read one out.
No, that can happen for last time as well.
Choose one and read one out.
Okay, Spiderweb Bubblegum has said, # spaff my load.
There we go. Done.
In relation to what? What's the context?
We said it on the last episode.
Oh, right, okay.
Done. That's all you need to know.
Can we have one more? No. One more.
Can we have runner-up?
Yeah. Runner-up of the week.
This is ridiculous.
Ben Buckingham has put, the worst thing about Skip the End not being out on today's Friday, last week, is he's just drove through Nuneaton and all he can do is imagine what our witty comments would be. He wouldn't have heard anyway, because once you go to Nuneaton, you're never getting out there alive. You grow another finger as soon as you come out. You're like, what the hell's happened here? Anyway,
we're
that's
putting
it.
Nuneaton on the map.
If you want to keep these questions coming, go on to skiptheend.co.uk and that gives you a nice link to our Twitter and Facebook. And as you hear, we read them all out, so just please keep them coming.
Can we please have a tweet of the week next week? Just the one.
A singular tweet of the week.
Make it quite Christmassy as well.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. It was quite a serious one.
Yeah.
Until the end.
Right. Until the end.
We had to add our little trademark there because it was too serious, that episode.
All these analytical points of view we were putting across.
Really serious.
And then that. But I tell you this much, the next one ain't going to be serious.
No.
But one, it is our Christmas special. And two, we're only bloody watching Star Wars The Force Awakens.
It's finally here.
Oh, my Lord.
And we get to talk about our worst franchises in film.
Get to talk about worst franchise, which will be a bit of fun. We're watching Bad Santa. In fact, we're watching Badder Santa.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a guest. Mark's best man at his wedding, friend of the podcast, friend of ours, Rich, is going to be joining us, giving us his opinions. He's going to give us his top five movies of all time as well, which is what we did when Gemma first appeared on the show.
I might try and guess some of them and see how well I know him. That'd be quite funny.
See, Rich is a proper movie buff, though, so he's going to have shit that we won't have heard.
Unlike us.
Yeah, he's professional. He knows his stuff big time.
He's going to make us look like mugs.
It's nice having someone on the podcast that's going to know this stuff.
It's taken only 34 episodes.
He's going to catch us out on so much.
Exactly. So as well as all that, we are going to be skipping back in time to 1995. As Adam said, our topic of conversation are going to be the worst franchises of all time.
I'm going to announce the winner of the Krampus competition.
Krampus competition.
And I'm going to give something else away, which is a one-off, which you cannot get anywhere else, and it is literally the best prize of all time.
Wow. Now,
and you guys don't even know what it is.
I have no idea, but this is big talk, so you better bloody deliver now.
You're just giving away an Apple watch.
Yeah.
This is better. I'm telling you now, this is the one.
Wow.
It's big. It is huge.
Is it a copy of Big on DVD?
VCD.
Betamax.
Yeah, and we're gonna we're gonna return a game show from the dead.
We're gonna bring back an old favorite. Family.
I'll tell you what, Les Dennis would love that episode.
He would, and our listeners are very fortunate to hear it as well. It's a Christmas special. We're gonna have a few beers. I might crack out the bloody eggnog.
Why not?
Let's get nuts.
And I'll crack out your nuts.
Brilliant. And also, we're going to be putting out the episode, you know, barring a catastrophe, we're going to be putting the episode out in 2 Fridays' time, i.e. one day after Star Wars comes out. I think we're going to be, if not the first, one of the very first podcasts to have a review of Star Wars out, because that is how bloody good we are.
None of the Americans will get it out because they wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah.
FYI, spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to warn you now.
Yes.
We're not going to hold back.
This is your 2 weeks warning for spoiler alert.
As soon as you've seen Star Wars, get on this episode.
Big time.
And you're listen to the episode anyway.
Yeah.
Just miss out the review if you have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then come back.
And come back and listen to
but
the review.
But delete it and download it again.
Yeah. And also, if they've not been to see it on opening night, I don't know that I want them listening to the podcast. What are they thinking?
And we might have a big announcement as well on the next episode.
You're pregnant.
Nope. No, I just love sweets and cake. But no, we are getting... There's going to be an announcement. I'm going to say it now. We're going to announce something.
I'm intrigued. I don't know what this is either.
I know. There's loads.
You're really spoiling us.
I know. It's crazy.
Am I getting replaced with Rich?
No.
There's a big announcement.
Oh, dear.
Yes, that.
So, wow.
Yeah.
It's been a good one.
It's been a good one.
See you next time.
See ya. Yeah.